Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.
This is Tim Staples of Catholic Answers. I'm excited to let you know that I also teach high school apologetics for homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. There are also recorded independent learning courses at homeschoolconnections.com. Whether you take apologetics with me, literature with Joseph Pierce, or philosophy with Bill Donahue, or any of the other 400 plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, it's a great way to get Catholic learning for your family.
Today we have with us Stephen Hemler, the president of the Catholic Apologetics Institute of North America. He's the author of The Reality of God, The Layman's Guide to Scientific Evidence for the Creator, and Search No More, The Keys to Truth and Happiness, both published by St. Benedict Press and Tan Books. And today we'll be covering his third book in this trilogy, we'll call it, from Tan Books as well, called Catholic Stories of Faith and Hope, How God Brings Good Out of Suffering. Welcome back to the show, Steve.
Well, thanks, Pete. It's great to be back, and may God continue to bless you and all your good work.
Well, thank you. So let's talk about this. I mean, this book kind of rounds out a trilogy of sorts, and we've discussed the previous two books on past episodes. What is this particular book about, and how does it fit in with the previous two?
Well, there are, in Cana's presentations, there are basically six, we had six presentations, one on God and science, the rest of the story on how, you know, science actually supports belief in God, and then evolution and creation, that they're really compatible. And that became the some seminars that I did for Catholic Distance University, online seminars, 3 weeks long. And then that turned into my first book, The Reality of God, The Layman's Guide to Scientific Evidence for the Creator. And my next book, Search No More, The Keys to Truth and Happiness, resulted from some more seminars I did, the apologetic seminars for Catholic Distance University on Jesus, His Divinity and Resurrection, salvation, how are we saved, why was Christ's passion necessary, and why we need the church, why go to Mass. So many people today find themselves... think they're spiritual but not religious, and they don't need to go to church. So that you know, dealt with Jesus' salvation in the church. And the first two, I said, like I said, were God and science and evolution and creation. So the sixth presentation we have is on suffering. Why would a loving God allow evil, pain, and suffering? And that is a very popular presentation, and Catholic Distance University also wanted me to do a seminar on that, so that became, that was first, I first did that in the summer of 2018, one of these 3 weeks long apologetic seminars. There were 50 students in that seminar, which is quite good, and it was very well received, and so that became this book, Catholic Stories of Faith and Hope, How God Brings Good Out of Suffering. And so this book basically has two components to it. The first is the apologetics, the theological arguments, I guess you could say, for why a loving God would allow evil, pain, and suffering, and the greater good that God can bring out of suffering if we unite it to Christ. And then to bring that to life, I included personal testimonies, first-person testimonies written by some people that I know, six people who have been through some pretty difficult things, and you know, they provided their testimony to of how God brought greater good out of that, and so that fleshed out the book, and so that's where it is.
Those testimonies I thought were great, a great addition to the book, because as you mentioned, it's kind of has two flavors to it. It has the apologetics part of it, which I enjoyed as well, but the testimonials kind of was sort of a Catholic chicken soup for the soul type addition to the book.
Yeah, these testimonies are very powerful, very faith-filled people who grew in their faith closer to God, others, and the church through their suffering, and they acknowledged that the good that came of it. And these six people, two of them are friends of mine that I met when we lived in Saudi Arabia from 1998 to 2011. That's when I retired and then started this apologetics ministry. That was Marjo Sanko. He's from the Philippines, and his wife Jean died of cancer in December of 2015. So he talks about that struggle of he and his wife. And then Anil Aranha, who founded Holy Spirit Interactive, he's from India, but I met him in Dubai, and he shared his conversion experience in there. Epiphany in Jail is the name of that chapter, how he basically was an atheist who through his suffering turned his life over to Jesus. And then four students from this first CDU seminar, they had some pretty powerful testimonies that they shared during that seminar, and so I talked with them, and they agreed to write those up and become a chapter in this book. Martha Madry talks about her and her husband dealing with the flooding, significant damage to their house from Hurricane Sandy in New Jersey in 2012. And Bob Caput, he talks about the death of his wife, Laurie, from cancer, her struggle, and there's growth through all that. She died in 2019. And then Father Richard McGloin, he's an Anglican priest who came into the Catholic Church this Easter Vigil just recently. He talks about his experience as a soldier in Iraq during the Gulf War, and then also his job loss and how these brought him closer to God. And then the final testimony is, I think, one of the most powerful, from Terry Thomas, whose son, Brett, died when he was 26 years old, adult son, in 2015. So these are all, I guess you could say, heartbreaking testimonies, but they do offer a lot of hope and encouragement to people that share, you know, how God brought good out of it through their suffering. It's not easy. It's not anything you'd wish on anybody, but when at the end of the day they can look back and see that it really was a blessing in disguise. Mm-hmm.
You know, early in the book, there's a quote that jumped out at me. I mean, it literally jumped off the page at me, and I'm going to give it here. That quote is, "Our illusion of self-sufficiency and self-control must, for our own sake, be broken," end quote. As a society, yes, that seems like a prevalent problem, because we like to be in control. We don't like it when things are out of our control. So how do we get past that mental block, we'll call it?
Well, it seems like you said most people are self-centered and want to be self-sufficient and in control of their lives, and we just don't want anybody telling us what to do. Just ask your teenager about that. But it seems like in times of difficulty, we may turn to God and seek His help, and many of us tend to naturally do that during times of difficulty. So for a lot of people, God is some kind of a vague emergency service. He's like called on when the going gets tough. And so if we always had a perfect life, we'd probably never turn to God. We'd never call on Him. So He really has no choice but to, you know, allow these things to happen, which are also a consequence of the fall and original sin in our world. But He doesn't make the suffering happen. He doesn't bring cancer and bring hurricanes. But He allows these things to happen oftentimes as a means to get our attention. And like I talked about with Anil Aranha, his conversion in jail when he was arrested, that became the means by which he gave himself to God and seeks God's will in his life. And the sad thing is that we may not do this as long as there is any other place to look for happiness, we may not turn to God as long as there is any other place. Mm-hmm. You know, we're always looking for happiness in all the wrong places, it seems like. And we may not realize God is all we need until God is all we've got. And so that's what many people, alcoholics and others, have found. And I just love this quote by C.S. Lewis in his book, The Problem of Pain. He says that God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pains. Mm. Our pain and suffering, he says, is God's megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And so God knows that our happiness, true happiness, lies in him, and that our illusion, like you say, of self-sufficiency and self-control must, for our own sake, for our own good in this life as well as in the life to come, be shattered. And pain and suffering oftentimes do that, and it helps us to reminds us that we're not the center of the universe and not in control of our lives, and helps us find, you know, the proper perspective in life, which is, you know, humble abandonment of self-will to God's will.
Right. The book itself is broken into three parts, and I want to take a look at each of those parts. And then the first part of the book, you cover disease and natural disasters and the suffering that comes along with those. And here we are going through probably the worst medical-related event of our lives, certainly. This concept has got to have been very hard for some people to grasp, especially those who have either gone through difficulties with COVID or lost someone from COVID. How is the suffering beneficial to us?
Well, like I said, it helps us turn to God. We can either become better, as these six people have testified in the book, or we can become bitter. Many people become bitter when faced with this suffering. They get angry at God and angry at, you know, just in general. But that's not the Christian way. The Christian way is to that suffering is redemptive, that we grow in holiness. We grow in our virtues through suffering. Our own suffering allows us to develop courage, patience, humility, endurance. And, you know, when we're helping other people who are suffering, we develop the virtues of compassion, empathy, unselfishness, love, charity, generosity, and et cetera. And St. Augustine, he said that God judged it better to bring good out of evil than to have no evil at all. So this is a concept that is, like you said, foreign to our culture. And that's why I think people have such a hard time. But as Christians, we can provide a witness that suffering can be a redemptive, lead to a deeper fullness in relationship with God, the church, and others, and allow us to learn wisdom, become more wise. Moral character gets formed, as we know, through hardship, no pain, no gain. And swimming against the current makes us stronger. Swimming with the current doesn't make us as strong as swimming against the current. So these difficulties, like I say, can be blessings in disguise if we have the right attitude.
Mm-hmm. In the second part of the book, you look at suffering caused by evil human behavior. We're talking moral evils here, lying, stealing, rape, murder. Here we are 4 months into 2021, and we're back to someone getting shot every other day, it seems, in the news. A lot of people with any kind of religious background are probably sitting there wondering what in the world's going on. So what are your thoughts on what we're seeing develop here in our country in the last couple months?
Well, I think it has to do with the collapse of our Judeo-Christian moral foundation. If somebody doesn't believe, I mean, if somebody believes in heaven and hell and that we're going to be judged by what we do, then I think it's far less likely that they're going to go out and murder people. But if they bought into what our society says, that this is all there is, you know, the science has oftentimes said that that, you know, we're just a speck of dust, meaningless, and when we're dead, that's it. And so there's no judgment, nothing afterwards. And you know, I think people need a moral foundation. I do know that our second president, John Adams, he said that, talking about our Constitution, he said, the U.S. Constitution, he said, our Constitution was made only for moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other. And so it's not surprising when we reduce the the moral and religious foundations in society, and we don't teach our kids right from wrong and, and growth and character, that this sort of stuff happens. It's sad, but and it's certainly tragic, but it's not unexpected, and so we reap what we sow, I think.
Yeah, and on the flip side of that conversation, I really liked you got a section there, on avoiding tyrannical behavior. And as the saying goes, a government big enough to give you everything you want is also big enough to take it all away. So how do we straddle as a society, particularly here in America, straddle that narrow line between the government protecting us, which in some sense that's what they're there for, and the government becoming too heavy-handed in our daily affairs?
Well, I guess, you know, we're getting a little bit off the topic here, but I think that, you know, that it, again, has to do with we're either going to be governed by the power, I forget who said this, Webster or somebody, we're either going to be governed by the power of the sword or the power of the Bible. Mm. We're either going to be, you know, internally in control of ourselves, or we're going to have external control. And so, again, when we reduce this moral foundation to our society, and which comes from religion, even George Washington, he said that, we need to take with caution, we need to indulge with caution the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. And so all of our founders in this country knew that, it takes religion to have morality, and when you, you know, knock down religion and put it in the private sphere, and how many people don't go to church and never expose to, you know, the teachings of Christ or anything? And so, yeah, it's if we're not going to be governed by our conscience and the moral formation of our virtues, then we're going to have to be governed by the sword, so to speak, dictatorship type, you know, heavy-handed government, like you said.
Right. So the third and final part of the book is suffering and the purpose of life. And Steve, you and I have known each other for a number of years, even before you started publishing the books. And I think your own story is kind of a good example of this. You left a comfortable, well-paying job to do what you do now, evangelize and teach the faith, even though in the past 12 months it's become a little more difficult. So what can you tell people from your own experience about finding one's purpose in life?
Yes, in the book, I talk about that I have found that there are really two purposes in life, to serve and to grow, to serve God and others, loving service to God and others, and to grow in holiness, to grow in virtue. That's basically our calling, because as Jesus said, or as Revelation, the book of Revelation, it says that nothing imperfect can enter heaven. And Jesus said, you must be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. And so that's, you know, that's what our life is all about, trying to grow in holiness so we can, you know, achieve the life, eternal life in heaven. Of course, purgatory is the way station in that regard, that how many of us don't get that right in this life? There's very few of us that are perfect by the time we die, and so we do need further purification. But that's a big point and a purpose of life is to grow in holiness. And like I said earlier, suffering, difficulties, and hardships can bring that about. And that's when we grow in holiness, is when we turn to God and rely on Him during these times. And in the Spirit, especially in the church and in the sacraments and the Eucharist, that's what's been so difficult about this COVID is, missing the Eucharist. I just love that saying, we are what we eat. Mm-hmm. And if we eat the body and blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ, He fills us and we become more like Him. And so He helps us. His grace and His presence, especially in the Eucharist, help us to become more like Him. So serving God and others and growing in holiness. And yes, I had long felt called to serve God in the church full time. And as soon as I could, I took early retirement voluntarily from Saudi Aramco, the Saudi Arabian oil company, like I said, to start this apologetics ministry. And I really admire what you do and what you did, how you walked away from a job, a great job, and, you know, supporting your family to step out in faith and provide the ministry that you do. So it's wonderful that you've done that, and it's a great example.
Thank you. In to get a little more deeper in the weeds on some of that stuff you just said there, in that opening chapter of this section, you write that, again, the first primary purpose of life is to grow in personal virtue and happiness, or holiness. And I was reading this section, it kind of hit me. To do that, we need to slow down, because we're so fast-paced in this world today, which has been the American way of life for some time, and perhaps... Always looking for that silver lining. Perhaps that's one good thing that came out of this pandemic. It forced us to slow down.
Yes.
With the stories you gathered and compiled for writing this book, can you share some ways that people can pursue this growth in virtue and holiness through that process, perhaps, of slowing down?
Yes, I think, like you said, a lot of people are teleworking now. Mm-hmm. And so they don't have those long commutes to work, and so they've got several extra hours in the day now that they did not have before. And so to use that time in prayer, meditation, the divine office, especially like the office of readings, and to just partake of the Mass, the sacraments, and prayer, just to spend time with God in the church and maybe online Bible studies. I know people that are doing that. So it's a great time to, like you say, we've been forced to slow down. And in a sense, that is a blessing. That's one of these things that I think, like you said, the silver lining that we can see out of this. And one thing that I know was very important to me when I faced a difficult time in my life, when I lost my job in Tennessee at a chemical plant there, and our family we got another job in Saudi Arabia. And so that's a big decision, you know, moving to Saudi Arabia. And a quote that I thought was really important was that our problems are storms on the sea of life that are not meant to sink us, but to sanctify us. Mm. Again, you know, these are opportunities to grow closer to God and to grow in holiness. And that's because each storm is an opportunity, like I said, to grow closer to God. And as we grow closer to God, the more we love God and develop trust in God's care. And the more we love God, the more we desire to serve God and others, this loving service to God and others. And so the more we serve God and others, then the more like God we become, the holier mm-hmm. we become. And so, again, these all tie together, and for many people it starts with these storms. And the important thing to recognize is they're not meant to sink us, but to sanctify us. I think that's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And the second primary purpose you discuss in this section is to lovingly serve God and others, which is a sharp contrast to that moral evil we discussed earlier. So what are some ways that people who ordinarily wouldn't be comfortable doing this can step outside of their shells and make this happen?
Well, in all of our lives, we have opportunities to serve others, including in our families, and even like in our churches, our parishes. And then there are many opportunities, even online, to get involved like you've done in different ministries that provide service to others. So there are many, prayer and following, trying to discern God's will for your life is an important thing. And I do share a chapter in the book that we're talking about, Catholic Stories of Faith and Hope. I do share about how we were able to discern that it was God's will for us to move to Saudi Arabia through these five C's, these tests, the five C's mm-hmm. that it's called. And so I think there is guidance in this book on discerning God's will and how to serve.
Absolutely. So to close, wrap up here today, you know, I've known you for some time. We mentioned that earlier. You know, I was there to see how excited you were when you got the first book deal. Now you've got the third book done. It's rounded out the trilogy. So what's next for Steve Hemler? Any more books?
Actually, there is another one in the works. We have several people involved with Cana now, and two of the people are writing their own books. And one of them in particular, I think it's a very interesting concept. He's exploring research on how being religious, being active at church, can make people happier, help people to be happier. And he's going to have scientific studies to back this up. And so I think that's good. And so I guess the fourth book that's in the works is a manual of Catholic apologetics, manual for Catholic apologetics, short answers to faith's big questions. So these are all, our son asked me, he said, as a parent, he's a new parent, and he's mm-hmm. looking ahead. We have a grandson now, our first mm-hmm. grandchild. And he said that he wants to have something that's short, that he can read. It's not a whole book, but it's just a specific topic that he can, read. And so all these are one page, these topics, these big questions, short answers to face big questions. Things like, does God exist? Is the Genesis story of creation true? Is evolution compatible with divine creation? Did Jesus really rise from the dead? Why be a practicing Christian? All these things we're talking about. What is the purpose of life? Why does God allow even injustice? Why turn to Jesus when we're hurting? All these kind of things. So, is the Catholic faith true? Why are the sacraments important? Is Christ really present in the Eucharist? Why be Catholic? Why go to Mass? So this is all going to be short, very short things that a parent could read quickly and then share with their child or friends or relatives in general.
Fantastic. So, Steve, where can people find your book, Catholic Stories of Faith and Hope, How God Brings Good Out of Suffering?
Well, the publisher, Tan Books, if they go to tanbooks.com, it'll be there. And online retailers, Catholic bookstores, Amazon has it in stock. I think it officially publishes on Tuesday, April 20th. And so that's when you can start downloading the Kindle and getting these copies. But it's available anywhere Catholic books are available.
Fantastic. Steve, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule again and spending it with us. Any closing thoughts?
Just that, like I say, that God continues to bless you and your wonderful ministry. And it's been great getting to know you, and thanks for all your work.
And same with you, Steve. With that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. Until next time, God bless.
This episode is brought to you by Hallow, the number one Catholic app. Hallow has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallow meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallow.com/breadbox.